So good afternoon to this panel on quality management. Hans Magnus Enzensberger, who is a renowned German essayist, lyricist, novelist, publisher as well, recently wrote in an article about the internet that it's as huge a dunghill as ever existed. It's a Mount Everest of dung. Helmut Spinner, a philosopher of knowledge, was talking about the internet in a similar line of argument, and they're about the same age. So Hans Magnus Enzensberger now is 77, and so for this generation, obviously public information was always edited. There was always a quality control before information got out into the public. So when they look at the internet, they get the feeling that someone has to sort through it and separate the garbage from the valuable information.
It's really about the perspectives and challenges of open access, of free online availability of scientific publications. And then I will introduce you to this concept of interactive open access publishing and collaborative peer review. So that's a new thing that we try to establish. And I will illustrate this with our journal, this Atmospheric Chemistry and Physics journal, which is edited by the European Geosciences Union. And we have several other journals now following the same way successfully. And I will also talk a little bit about alternatives. There is quite a bit of movement in the scientific publishing area right now. And I will talk about alternatives to our approach and then wrap up in the end. So open access, first of all, means really free online availability of scientific research publications. That's the core definition. And essentially, most of these research publications are publicly funded anyhow. So it's just fair if the public can also access them freely. And there are really many good reasons why you want to have open access to scientific publications. And there are educational reasons. Economic reasons, it's really a lot of money that is being wasted in this business in the past, which was not open access, but through a subscription market. And there are scientific reasons. I can't dwell on all of these. These are subjects for presentations by themselves. But I will go down to these scientific reasons, and here in particular, to improvement of quality assurance. In the past, there was a wrong notion that open access would endanger quality assurance, like the internet might endanger knowing what is right and what is wrong. It was what was referred to in the introduction already. But indeed, one can show that the opposite is the case if you have the right structures in place. So first of all, of course, what is good in open access is that referees, the guys who are supposed to give their opinion on scientific papers, have more information to work with if everything is freely available, because also at universities you don't have access to the whole scientific literature, just to a small fraction of it which your university or institute has subscribed to in the past. And what we want is really that everything is open to everybody. And the key issue is that we can also have interactive forms of review and that we can get the whole scientific community engaged. But why, first of all, why do we want to improve something? Is there anything wrong with the current state of scientific publishing? And yes, indeed, there is. You may have heard of these spectacular cases of scientific fraud, papers in Nature and Science and everywhere, and then it turned out it was just not correct. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is not what I'm talking about. Primarily, I'm talking about a very bad thing, which is common practice in science, that's really carelessness, that you sort of try to publish as much and as fast as you can, and then you just have a long list of publications, and that's everything that counts, and really the careful quality of your papers is neglected. And this has really some bad consequences beyond science, because it's a large waste of resources, really, also for society. Sorry, was the wrong way. So, and the key from our point of view is really that the traditional peer review, which was behind the closed curtain, people, you have a referee who judges whether this paper is good or not, and then they say yes or no, and then it goes out and is published. But we think that this is flawed simply by because editors and referees have, of course, limited competence. And this closed peer review, where you don't see who does the refereeing and what goes on there and what the comments are, also leads to a retardation and loss of information. I will illustrate that later on. And in traditional scientific journals, you also do get discussion, but that's very sparse. Just every 100th paper gets a comment so that somebody writes something referring to that old paper. Otherwise, the publishing stream just goes on and there is not really too much critical discussion here. And we have a dilemma here because scientists want to find new things quickly and want to have quick exchange. So on the one hand, you want to have speed, you want to disseminate your information as quickly as possible. And on the other hand, thorough quality assurance, meaning review by fellow scientists, takes some time. Sometimes it can take days until you assess that paper just for one referee if you spend your whole work time on it. So the problem is how to get these two things together. Well, we think it is possible, and simply by doing this in two stages. So in the past, one tried to do everything in one stage and put out the final product in a printed journal. But now on the internet, you can do it in two stages. In stage one, we quickly publish what comes in as a discussion paper. And then we have public peer review and interactive discussion. I'll show you how that works. So we maintain the classical peer review plus add some interactive public discussion. And then in the second stage only, we go over to the final paper, which is then considered as representative of the state of the art in science. So do we have any pointer or so around here? Well, anyhow, what you can see up there is the orange one. Okay, thanks. Is essentially how the classical peer review works. It looks crowded, but these are all the interactions between referees you can see up there. So these are the peers who do the review. The author who first comes up with the manuscript, the editor who publishes the journal as such or edits the journal. And what you get here is the author submits a manuscript, the editor sends it to referees and has a quick yes or no decision if this is worth being considered at all. He can also do that actually without consulting referees. And then the paper is in our case already published, and the referees then in public give their comments, and also the scientific community can give comments onto this discussion paper, and this is our discussion forum here. And then afterwards, there is revision and so on. This is not public anymore. We can't do everything in public for practical reasons at the moment. Ideally, we should. But then you get to the final revised paper. And in a classical peer review process, it's the same thing up here. But the only thing you see is really the final paper. All this up front here you don't see, and so you can also not contribute to it. And what we gain from this essentially is really an all-win situation. So the author gets the discussion paper out very quickly. You don't have a tedious review and revision process, but first you put out your discussion paper. Then you have this public review, so if you wrote a very good paper, you get positive feedback in the public, and that's also quite important, especially for young scientists. It's quite good for graduate students and so on. But also, you avoid then hidden obstruction, because in science, it's really important whether you get your paper through or not. This essentially is a little political decision in science, which way you go in the future. And in the past, all this was hidden, essentially. And now, in our journal, it's transparent, essentially. Also, the arguments why the paper is rejected, for example, or why it is accepted. And then, in the final paper, due to this iteration beforehand and public input already into the final paper, you have maximum information density there. So, all this, if you're interested in detail, we can address later on, and it's also all freely on the web of our journal, all the details, so I don't go into every single line here. Here just some data now on this specific journal, Atmospheric Chemistry and Physics. We are using a Creative Commons license, and the online access is free. Unfortunately, this doesn't project very well, but we also have paper copies and CDs on demand, so all these issues of archiving and so on are essentially nothing that we have to deal with. We hope that it will be electronic in the future, but we also have paper. We have a global network of editors. We have a Nobel laureate on our board, which was very important for us to take off the ground, essentially, because this may all sound fairly straightforward to you if you are not in science, but if you are in science, you know that classically peer review was considered sort of a holy grail, and don't touch it, don't make anything public or anything like that. So people were very skeptical whether we would be successful at all. But indeed, we have been growing considerably. Now we are already at 400 papers per year, these final papers, which is a substantial fraction out of the about 4,000 papers coming out in our field of research every year. That includes ozone hole research and climatic research and stuff like that. So the statistics are going up. I don't want to dwell on this. This is very important for scientists, but probably not for the majority of the auditory right here now. We can go back, as I said, later on if we want, but here the discussion statistics now. And that's interesting. You can see we have some papers which attracted up to 17 interactive comments in public, and only the referees that we have who have been designated beforehand, they can be anonymous. All the other people from the scientific community have to give their names. So you are responsible for what you say, and every comment stays there permanently archived and is even citable in the future. So people think whether they put something there or not, but nevertheless, for some papers we have a lot of comments, but not everything is being commented. And this is one key issue. That's why we maintain also the classical refereeing within our system, that you cannot rely on the public doing the whole job for you. We think we need to combine the classical point of view that you assign a referee, but then the referee can even stay anonymous, but he or she has to do the job in the public, plus you have the public input. So in any case, we do have substantial discussion that amounts up to 30 or 40% of the original volume of our journal is then added on as interactive discussion. So you can see it's a substantial amount of information that is being exchanged here in public, that's in pages back here per year. And this is what it looks like. Well, it's just a simple discussion forum. You have the original paper. This is all freely accessible for everybody in the world. And then down here, you have different threads of discussion, a referee comment, author answer, and here it goes back and forth and so on. And you can click in here. But commenting is only possible in our journal for registered scientists, because this is not meant to be a discussion forum where everybody can inform themselves about science, but really exchange between scientists in terms of quality assurance. And the good thing is, again, for those who are familiar with scientific publishing, we have launched our journal in 2001, and now, only 5 years after the launch, the impact factor, which is essentially the normalized citation count, so how often are papers in our journal being cited by other scientists, is the highest in our field, which is a total of 47. These are only the high-quality journals, essentially, that are there around the world. And we managed, with this new journal, to get to the top of these citations counts very quickly. So this was very nice to see that with open access and with this new form of peer review, you can indeed attract scientists. And so this is just to wrap up, to give you an idea. Scientific meetings from our society, we have up to 10,000 participants. So geosciences is not just a small club, it's a sizable fraction of science as such. And we do have different types of publication in our society, but besides atmospheric chemistry and physics, we have already 5 other journals doing the same as we do here, but there are no others in the world. There are about 7,000 top quality journals in the world, and these are the only 5 up to now doing this kind of peer review. All the others do traditional peer review, essentially. But others are coming the same way, so already one new journal is being launched in economics now, essentially this fall. This will take part will take place, the launch of this economics journal, and we hope that this will be the new standard of scientific quality assurance in the future. Now, if I still have a couple of minutes, I don't know how I'm doing. Now just the alternative concepts. Down here, I will return to our thing, which is collaborative peer review, which I have outlined just now. And here the alternative concepts, what you may have heard about already, is open peer review. That's different from what we do in the sense that open peer review really demands that everybody give their name in the review process. So you don't have any anonymous refereeing anymore. And in a perfect world, this is also what I would like to have, and I'm not shy of discussions in general, but occasionally when I do a review and I have little time because it's essentially something that I'm doing in addition to my real job, and I have little time and then I may be hesitant to put a critical question which may be either stupid or very important, but I don't have the time to go into all the details. So there are good reasons why you want to maintain some anonymity in this whole system. So that's something that one should think about. In open peer review, in any case, a few journals are pursuing this approach. You have no referee anonymity, but nevertheless, in the past, none of them was doing it in public, just the referee knew the identity of the author and the other way around. Some new ones tried to do it also in public, Biomed Central, for example, but we will see how that evolves, but none of these journals has become number one in their fields, which we have achieved within 5 years so far. So that makes you see that it's sometimes important to maintain strength of the past and add new things rather. Then there is also stuff where you can do discussion interactively on the internet only after the final paper has been published. This is also quite nice, but then you miss this added value that goes into the final paper. And this is what we try to do here. We try to combine essentially these other aspects with the traditional strength, and I hope I could show you just a short that it is working essentially, and give you a few future perspectives here really. For scientific publishing, again, in the past it was really you submit a manuscript, it's accepted or not, and then it's out there cast in iron and it's supposed to be true essentially, and there is nothing to do about it. You have one publication stage. But we are now doing two stages, discussion paper and final paper, and well, in the future it may evolve that really you have multiple stages of revision even. But scientists are hesitant to work on one paper forever, so at the moment they are already dealing with two, and that's enough for most of them. And then what you can do in an open access environment where everything is really freely available in science, which is not the case yet, unfortunately, you can do much better statistical analysis in citations and feedback between the editors and referees and authors, so you can do real quality assurance feedback loops and such. And the one important point here also is, as many of you may also have heard of this physics preprint server, archive.org, and other preprint servers, such large-scale open access publishing environments, which up to now do no quality assurance at all, essentially. They are just repositories, archives. But also in those, you could implement such discussion forums, and you can combine this with traditional journals and such. So the issue is this interactive open access publishing and the public collaborative peer review can be really combined with a lot of existing stuff in science. And here, as the last point, really, so what do we want to achieve? We want to have access to high-quality scientific publication, because about half of the scientific publications that you have out there, and that's a conservative estimate, is essentially not really needed for the progress of science. So really, there is a lot of papers that dilute rather than generate knowledge, and we want to focus this a little more, because it becomes more and more a problem as science grows exponentially, as everything else in society. So then we want to have this documentation of the scientific discussion, that you see really how science progresses. And as a matter of fact, you know, this is just in science, it's a little part of society, but I think if scientists can't be rational, it's of course difficult to demand of science society to have rational progress in politics and so on also. And I think really that this kind of transparency to see why a decision was taken and then to trace it back and to be able to refer to it specifically would be very nice also in politics, that you really can go back to what people have said in the parliament or wherever, and it's citable in PDF, a little PDF or whatever the future thing will be, and you can go back there and you have such a role model. Because as I told you earlier on, really, the decision whether a paper is published or not is a science policy decision, and that's what drives the direction of science. And so in this sense, I think that such public review, be it peer review or other forms of review, would be a good role model also for decision processes. And with this, I thank you for your attention.
That was a fascinating outlook at the end to open access politics. Science publication, the journal crisis is based on the fact that the oligopolistic scientific publishers have a control over the traditional kind of peer review process. Now this is changing. There are journals like yours coming up, but there's also a debate among Nature, which as I understand is a rather conservative, very renowned, but very conservative journal. But they have started a big debate on alternatives in peer review or to peer review. Maybe that's too radical, let's say, in the traditional peer review process. And you have contributed to that debate as well. Can you tell us a bit more about what other models are being talked about in this Nature debate, and maybe also an outlook on other fields? I mean, that's a fascinating story, of course, that with this journal, you made the top of the line within that short period, and that your peers obviously see the strength of publishing in this journal vis-a-vis publishing in other journals. Is that specific to atmospheric research? Is it more difficult in other areas, or are other areas more conservative, where scientists say we have to publish in these renowned, classical, closed peer review processes? Journals.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely an important aspect. So scientists are fairly reactionary at times, and so things are conserved, and so it is difficult to go against this. But there is a lot of motion also in the bio, in the life sciences at the moment. And maybe I should go back to this one just very quickly. This is what I showed you here. These alternative concepts, that's really, so, well, that's interactive media and education. There, essentially, the subject is already the topic here. But Biomed Central Biology, this is now a new approach where really you also have public review in this case and openness, so just no anonymity. But this is fairly new. We will see how they will do. But the reason, and here the British Medical Journal, this is a very old, well-established journal, important journal in the whole medical profession, and they have experimented also already 10 years ago, but they also wanted to do it just by the public without assigning referees and so on. So essentially, people have been experimenting, are experimenting, and I think that throughout science, meaning natural sciences, this can be applied. And I think it will be applied, as a matter of fact. And this was shown by the Nature debate, because more and more people, and especially high-quality journals also like Nature, are fully aware that the traditional forms of peer review are not adequate anymore. They don't manage with, because you have an exponential growth in the number of publications, and who should review all that? Who should read all that and so on if you just do it behind the curtain? So you have to open it so that really everybody can contribute. So in this sense, I think it affects all the different disciplines, and there are movements in all different disciplines, and I think also that the awareness is growing very rapidly now. So we have been lucky to have this Nobel laureate Paul Crutzen on our board in the beginning, because otherwise we would also, you know, like, these people trusted us, okay, it will be something, because a scientific publication, you spend 3 years for one good paper occasionally, and you don't want to give it to a journal which will never be seen in the world. So that's what makes the progress slow.
I would now like to give the chance to ask questions to the other two panelists, if you like, and then after that, open it up to the audience. Would you like to respond or ask?
Yeah, I would like to know what happens to unorthodox ideas and unorthodox papers, because in a public review process, people, you just mentioned that some people don't have time to get into these ideas and so on, and that's particularly difficult if it is about new and unorthodox things. In my field, linguistics, for example, there's another problem. If somebody works about very exotic languages, people feel very uneasy to comment on examples because they don't know the languages. So there are these problems, and in the traditional review process, or in a review process where you can have specialists in such and such languages or fields, you can ask them specifically, and they wouldn't just take part in an open process.
Right. I fully agree and see the point, and this is very important. But again, this is the little. I have to go back to the screen here, because this is where you have to consider all the things that may happen. So, again, in the traditional process, the author comes with this manuscript, and the editor asks the referees, and then you essentially jump to the final paper. So then an editor normally has to be hesitant to accept a very provocative paper, because if it's in your journal and you are the editor, then you essentially say this is correct, more or less, right? But so what we do is we say in dubio pro reo, so we say in the beginning, into the discussion forum, we allow everything that is not apparently complete trash. If it's provocative, it goes into our discussion forum. Only what we have, and the rejection rates are very small, actually. Occasionally, you have a paper which is just not properly done. You see it immediately. It's just a joke, essentially, and this you reject. But everything else we allow in there, and we say, this is the opinion of the author in the discussion forum. We do not back this up. And then what you said concerning the referees, this is exactly why we have designated referees, why also fields which are very specialized, but also in other fields, if you cut out the referees and let the public do everything, like if you put stuff on the internet and say, well, there are enough specialists out there, they will sort it out without anybody asking them to do it. It will never happen. So this is what would happen if we cut up this stuff here. No, but we ask, like in traditional journals, these two specialists that are in the world, or one or 10, we ask them to do the refereeing. And then in addition, we say, maybe there is a specialist also in Patagonia or so. If they have internet access, they can also put a comment there, even though I don't know them. So this is the advantage of this two-stage system. That's crucial here.
So just one quick question. Most scientific papers, I understand, most academic papers generally are not read by anyone. And so isn't it a bit of a problem? I mean, how can you have a discussion about something that no one has read?
Right. I mean, there is indeed, I mean, this is a problem. I don't think that it's true up to now. It's an exaggeration. But in the future, one might think that Google or other Google Scholar or other search engines are the only ones who will read the scientific papers, because we are having too many. It's just growing quickly. But essentially, also in traditional journals and in our journal, there are always the referees and the editor, at least, who have read the paper. And then maybe nobody else takes care of them. So indeed, but this again brings us back to the problem that you need to have those referees in place, because they are the ones who have to read it and will read it. And then the discussion, this was in the statistics, only every fourth to eighth paper gets a comment from the public. And there are different reasons. Some are that the paper is irrelevant and would not have needed to be published. But the other reason is maybe it's a thorough paper. It tells you what you want to know, and there is nothing to comment on. And or the referees have anyhow already said what has to be said. So as I said before, in traditional scientific journals, one in 100 papers gets a comment. In our journal, one in four gets a comment. It's a factor of 25. Plus, interestingly, we also have, when you want to comment, this whole process takes 2 months in our journal. So if you want to comment later on, half a year after it has been, or 10 years after it has been published, then you can still do a traditional comment, which is a paper in itself, essentially. And already now we can see we also have one in 100, like the traditional journals, of the classical comments, but we have one in four of these. So, but that's exactly the problem that we try to tackle.
That's yeah. Very impressive.
Yeah. Thanks.
So we have time for one, maybe two questions from the floor. Any questions? Yes, please. Can you please come up to the microphone?
So what was the reaction of the referees to this process?
Actually, for us, it's almost easier now to get referees than for other journals, because also as a referee, you invest time in doing the refereeing, and then in a classical journal, you give the referee to the editor, and then he or she deals with the authors, and then it's lost. Some of your suggestions will be heard, the others will be discarded, and so on. And what we offer also to the referees, I said it's an all-win situation, is that your opinion is out there, citable and archived forever, essentially. And so referees do like that. So it's always difficult to find referees. Refereeing capacity is the most limited resource in scientific publishing. It's not money, it's nothing else, it's just refereeing capacities, competent referees. And we find referees easier than others on average. I don't have hard numbers because every journal keeps its own statistics. But we know that referees like it. And one thing I forgot to mention is we offer our referees anonymity or non-anonymity. They choose whether they put their name there. And we see that on average, some 30 to 40% of referees want to sign around 40% want to sign their comments, and the other 60% don't want to sign them. But there are also differences between communities. Modelers who do more theoretical work tend to sign more of their comments because they want to claim authorship for what they suggested, whereas experimentalists rather question whether the other guy can measure this really, and then you don't claim authorship for this question. So overall, I think the referee reaction was very positive.
Thank you very much to Ulrich Pöschel, and this is the end of this first part of the session. Another round of applause for Ulrich. Thank you. Some music in between, very nice. Please don't fall asleep after lunch. So Ulrich mentioned as a kind of absurdity that you would build a system and allow everyone to put things there and ask everyone to review things. And indeed, it sounds absolutely absurd, but it also sounds like a description of Wikipedia. Wikipedia has an amazing track record of producing quality, there is no doubt about this. There have been studies. We will probably hear about these from Martin in a second. There have been people who doubted these studies as well. And there are problems that the Wikipedia community has recognized. And of course, there are approaches to solve these problems. And some recent developments in the German Wikipedia community were commented by the press. This is CNET News in the US. Can German engineering fix Wikipedia? Interesting. Is it an engineering problem? Knowledge engineering, maybe? And BBC News commented, headlined, not as wiki as it used to be, and that's probably a play on words, not as witty as it used to be, maybe? Is it getting less witty? Martin Hase, he mentioned himself already that he is a linguist, he's a professor at the University of Bamberg, and he is also a board member of Wikimedia Deutschland e.V. Please.
So I'm going to start with criticism, which has already been mentioned, and then I will come to my topic, quality management. And since this is a panel discussion, I want to be a bit provocative, and I will speak about something that I call expertism. And I will conclude with research. Yeah, criticism. So Wikipedia is quite open about criticism. Actually, in the English Wikipedia, there is a page called Wikipedia Criticism. You can look it up. And there you find quite a number of critical voices about Wikipedia. Most of the criticism can be summed up by the formula that I've put on my slide here. So the the essential way to criticize Wikipedia is to say that the problem is that anyone can write anything. And that, at the same time, there is poor quality management, and I will come back to that, so that Wikipedia is not reliable. So, well, first of all, one can challenge whether really anyone can write anything, and does write anything, but I think the essential point here is quality management, and that is the topic of the panel. So I will speak about measures that have been proposed and measures that have been taken to do quality management in Wikipedia. The first thing one thinks about is, of course, restricted anonymous access, which has come up in the English Wikipedia, so that anonymous users cannot start new articles. I'm not very much interested in that aspect, so I will leave it out. I won't mention it. I will only mention it here and not go into details. Then I will speak about something that which has been there from the beginning, but which is not very well discussed, and very many people, including authors of Wikipedia, don't know about it. Something to do with attribution. Then I will speak about reviews. So there are featured articles, good articles, and so on. I will mention WikiPress, which is another way of quality management, which is hardly ever mentioned in critical articles. I will speak about validation, which has been implemented and which is proposed, and at the end about stable versions, which goes together with validation. So let's start with attribution. So there's a common prejudice, that is, in printed encyclopedias, you can attribute an article to an author, which doesn't hold for German encyclopedias, by the way, but for Encyclopedia Britannica, for example, and you cannot do so in a collaboratively written wiki. So that is the prejudice, and it's not quite true, because first of all, you have an article history where all the authors are listed, but the problem is that some of the authors are anonymous, and most of the authors use nicknames, so perhaps one doesn't know very much about the authors. But in the end, you know a lot of things about what the authors do within Wikipedia, because there is always a list of a user's contributions, and then you can evaluate what a user does by their attributions. By their contributions, which can be listed. So that is something that many people are not aware about, including authors. We have come across cases where authors were very much surprised that all what they said on discussion pages will be forever conserved on the internet. And after they have realized that, they have perhaps changed their style, or they haven't, because it was too late anyway. So then there is another very interesting measure of quality management, which is reviews. So we have two categories which have been introduced. First of all, featured articles,
in the German encyclopedia, in the German Wikipedia, they are called excellent articles. So to date, which is yesterday, there were 1,115 on the English Wikipedia. There are more by now. I've checked it this morning, but I didn't change my slides anymore. And on the German Wikipedia, there are 859. So after some time, I think that was introduced in 2004, people realized that it will take a lot of time until there are about 10,000 excellent or featured articles. So we've calculated that for the German Wikipedia, that's not the latest statistics, but it seems that about 2020 there will be about 10,000 articles. So we have tried to find another category which can grow much faster, and that is good articles, or in German, articles worth reading, lesenswerte Artikel. So this has been started last year, and there are on the English Wikipedia 1,438 by yesterday, and in on the German Wikipedia there are some more already, because that was an initiative was first of all started on the German Wikipedia. Now, then there's another very interesting initiative which concerns at least German Wikipedia, and that is Wikipress. So the publishing house Zenodot started to publish books on Wikipedia. I have one there. First one, which was published under the direction of a Wikipeditor, for this one it's Henriette Fiebig, who is present here, so you can find her at the Wikipedia booth in the other building. This one deals with Wikipedia, but the other the other books deal with specific topics in the real world. For example, the last one about the sun system, which has been reviewed by experts of the field, and it seems that it is now the leading, well, it is, it seems to be the best introductory book to the sun system, even at a university level. So this is quite good, and it's based on articles from Wikipedia which have been edited and read by professional proofreaders and by experts, so one can be pretty sure that these articles are quite reliable, and then they have been refed into Wikipedia. So the best thing perhaps about it, if you want to study astrophysics, you get this book where you can buy it, or you get the PDF for free, as in free beer, on the internet. So now, just this year, so this is very new, there has been some discussion on validation and stable versions. So there is already some kind of validation within articles, so that the community or experts have expressed what they think about the article, whether the information is valid. So, for example, featured articles are some kind of validation that exists already. But this is an approach which will be built, which will be built further. For example, there's a proposal to have some more meta information about the validity of an article in the encyclopedia. Then there is another thing which has to do with validation which exists already. These are permalinks. So you can link to a specific version of the article. So on Wizards of Oz, on the English Wikipedia, you can get to a specific version. This was the latest version yesterday, and it's there with the permalink. You get a unique ID, which is called old ID, which is a bit misleading because that was the latest ID that I could get hold on of. And then you can link to this specific entry and make a citation. And if you're sure of yourself, you want to cite Wikipedia, you get a good version of the article. There's a problem with it because all the links within the article, for the time being, always link to the latest version. And if there's a template within the article, this template shows the newest form of the template. So there can be still vandalism within the article, although you have this specific permalink. So that led to the idea that there has to be a patch within Wikipedia that allows for a real stable version, that you can have a permalink on something and then you get it really stable. So with all the links and all the templates of that version at that time when it was written. So this is the proposal of stable versions. That patch exists already. It has been built and implemented, but it has not been added to Wikipedia. And as far as I see it, the German Wikipedia will be the first one which will work with stable versions. And it seems that by the end of the year, we will have this patch within German Wikipedia. And I think it will change the approach and especially the criticism of Wikipedia a bit. Now, let's say something about experts, because very many people call for experts and say with more experts, Wikipedia would be better. And the common prejudice for the time being is that there are more trolls around than experts. Actually, we don't know whether this is true. Sometimes one gets the impression, but when you look at studies on Wikipedia, for example, the Würzburg study, one finds out that the level of education is rather high. But the Würzburg survey doesn't go into the problem of experts, whether they are experts or not, but we know at least that the level of education is rather high, and more research has to be done in order to see if this is really true, that there are more trolls than experts, or whether there are already very many experts. Yeah, and still there's a problem with experts. I've called this approach that people call for experts and think that everybody is fine if there are more experts, expertism. Because there's a lot to say about experts. I give you an example of myself as an expert. Some time ago, I think in 2003, at the beginning of 2003, I started an article on gender on the German Wikipedia. So this is the citation of that old article way back in 2003. You see it if you look. Have a look at the idea at the ID. It's rather a rather low number, and I wrote this text, which is here in German, and I gave you a rough translation in English. And people pointed out to me immediately after that they couldn't understand what gender is all about. Well, it's grammatical gender, of course, and and it was too difficult. I thought it was rather easy to understand because I added links to difficult words, for example, agreement, so the red words are links, but still people thought it was too difficult. So the problem is that as an expert, I want to be precise, I want to be exact, and I use jargon. And exactness is directly opposed to understandability. So if you look at the article now, you will see that it starts in a rather unscientific, imprecise way, but you get the message. And then later on, you will find a newer version of that text too. So you find the precise formula, but in the beginning you get something which gives you an immediate idea of what radical gender is about. Now, there's another problem with experts, that is schools. Experts normally are and belong to a school in science and scholarship and so on. To give you an example, if you take a look at Brockhaus, at Native American languages, you find good information. It was all written by a colleague of mine who was very competent, and well, later on it was abridged by the editors, so that may be a problem. But still somebody, a layman, which wants to know something about Native American languages and has read something about it in another book and reads the information now in Brockhaus, will be a bit confused, because that is not the same thing. If the same layman looks it up in Wikipedia, he may be confused in the same way, because I think students of my colleague, or my colleague herself, was involved in the article on Wikipedia as well. But still, if this layman reader is confused, he or she can just turn to the discussion page and we'll find out that there are two schools which are opposed one against the other, and that there is much discussion about it, and then this reader will find out that his confusion is quite understandable. And that is all documented in Wikipedia. There are articles about the two approaches and so on, and that is not in Brockhaus. So the Brockhaus information is reliable, and it's well precise and everything, but it doesn't take account of these two approaches to the classification of Native American languages. Another problem with experts is motivation. Because experts have a special motivation, and we have heard about it. They want to get credit for what they do, and so on. And that's perhaps a problem in Wikipedia. I've told you that everything is attributed to somebody, but still, that is not really the way experts get motivated. And then there's a very big problem, which is formal qualification. Of course, if you want an expert on linguistics, you can always ask linguists. They are professional linguists. Some of them work in universities, all right. But now take other subjects. Take subjects of popular culture. There is no formal qualification to write about a phenomenon of popular culture. But Wikipedia is especially useful when it comes to such subjects. So what could be the formal qualification for that? So that is really a problem. And then there's availability, because some of the fields which are treated in Wikipedia, and again, popular culture is among them, well, there are many people interested in that, but there's a certain lack of experts. That is certainly another problem. Now, what can we do? Of course, we have to find out more about Wikipedia, and a lot of research is done. I have here a quotation from Matthias Schindler, who has told me this in German. The translation is mine. A personal communication 2 days ago, that there's more ongoing research on Wikipedia than there has been on all other modern encyclopedias for the last 20 years. And this seems to be quite true. I've listed some of the ongoing research projects that are now done by, well, only in Germany, so there are much more in the rest of the world, but I'm more informed about Germany, and you see that the first two projects are funded by DFG, which is the German Science Foundation, so you see that there's really some interest in this field. And there are other projects. 10 of these projects will be presented on Sunday at the Wikipedia Research Symposium here within Wizards of Oz. So this seems to be a good moment to mention it. So, and with this research, research projects, well, most of them deal with the specific ways of interaction in Wikipedia and with sociology. First of all, we can find out who the Wikipedians are and where the problems are, because most of the problems which have been mentioned in the literature come from impressions and prejudices, as I've shown you. And I think it's time to see where they really are and what can be done about them. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Martin. Please keep your questions till after the next presentation, which is going to be by Larry Zanger, who was the chief organizer of Wikipedia in its first year, is now with the Digital Universe Foundation, and in the abstract that he sent us to his talk, he told us that he will make a special announcement on the Wizards of OS. Please, Larry.
Well, my talk is going to be very low tech here. There are tens of millions of intellectuals online today. What is possible with tens of millions of intellectuals working together on educational and reference projects? The very thought of that makes me quiver, literally quiver with excitement. I'm amazed that we, educated people throughout the world, have barely begun to imagine what new reference and educational materials could come into being if we pool our efforts in the open collaborative ways demonstrated by open source software hackers. Even less have we begun to take such possibilities really seriously or actually get to work on them. We may take Wikipedia as an early prototype of the application of open source hacker principles to content rather than code. Wikipedia, started only 5 years ago, now has millions of articles in over 100 languages and has nearly single-handedly introduced the world's intellectuals to the possibilities of enormous collaborative efforts online. By giving intellectuals the world over an open platform on which to work together, Wikipedia has shown a global audience what enormous distributed knowledge collaboration can achieve. The work of Wikipedians has astounded the world. I always have been an enormous fan of Wikipedia, and I still am. But I now want to help launch something better, if that's possible. Let me explain why I'm doing so, and then I will describe the project itself. When I first started working on Wikipedia, I was also employed as the editor-in-chief of Newpedia, a more straight-laced, peer-reviewed, free encyclopedia project. Wikipedia was to be a freewheeling, fun side project, a dynamic source of content for the more serious Newpedia project. Wikipedia was closer in spirit to the old open source hacker ways, where Newpedia was essentially an academic project. But together, Newpedia and Wikipedia were going to be an unstoppable high quality article creation juggernaut, or so I wrote in 2001. I think there are many misconceptions about Newpedia and why it failed, but I don't have time to go into that here. But it did wither and finally die due to neglect. The result was that only half of my own original conception of the finest encyclopedia in the history of humankind, the wild and anarchical side, was preserved. Not surprisingly, with only one half of the original design, some problems with Wikipedia, problems that continue to this day, emerged. Here are some of them. The community does not enforce its own rules effectively or consistently. Consequently, administrators and ordinary participants alike are able to essentially act abusively with impunity, which begets a never-ending cycle of abuse. Widespread anonymity leads to a distinguishable problem, namely the attractiveness of the project to people who merely want to cause trouble, or who want to undermine the project, or who want to change it into something that it is avowedly not. In other words, the troll problem. Many now complain that the leaders of the community have become insular. It has become increasingly difficult for people who are not already part of the community to get fully on board, regardless of their ability or qualifications. This arguably dysfunctional community is extremely off-putting to some of the most potentially valuable contributors, namely academics. Furthermore, there is no special place for them so that they can contribute in a way that they feel comfortable with. As a result, it seems likely that the project will never escape its amateurism. Indeed, one might say that Wikipedia is committed to its amateurism. In an encyclopedia, there's something wrong with that, I think. Can Wikipedia recover from these problems? The first step to recovery is admitting that you have a problem in the first place. Wikipedia's most passionate defenders, if they react at all, will probably do nothing but explain why I am mistaken in each of these criticisms. I know, of course, that there are movements afoot to reform Wikipedia in various ways, and we've heard about them. But I see little evidence that the community, whatever its discontents, will go so far as to admit the problems as I have described them. The failure to recognize these serious problems is a reflection of the fact that, at bottom, they are political problems. Like all open communities online, Wikipedia's community has been self-selecting, and its policies have determined who stays and who leaves or who is driven away. For this reason, online communities tend to become rather conservative in their attitudes toward their own systems, and Wikipedia is certainly no different. Often, if you wish to make any very important change to an open source or open content project that has an entrenched community, the only way to do it is to start a new community. And that's what I propose. I propose a fork of Wikipedia to be called the Citizendium, that is, the Citizens Compendium. It's online at C-I-T-I-Z-E-N, Citizen, D-I-U-M, citizendium.org. At least a proposal is up. Legally, of course, a fork is clearly permitted. I think it is also morally permitted, perhaps even morally recommended. If there's a chance of retaining Wikipedia's virtues, which I don't want to get rid of, while eliminating the problems that I just mentioned. It will be a progressive fork, that is, all the articles will be imported at once, but individual articles will keep getting refreshed with Wikipedia's latest changes until they are changed in the Citizendium, and then those individual articles will be individually forked. Obviously, you want to know how the Citizendium editorial system will differ from Wikipedia's system. There will be two main areas of dissimilarity: the involvement of experts and the creation of a more mature community. There will be other differences as well. Before I elaborate, however, let me assure you that I do not think that I necessarily have all these details right. Obviously, I'm fallible, and like all of us, my understanding is limited. Clearly, this project needs as much intelligent input as it can get. So first, here are some details of the editorial system I propose. We will have a new role in the system, that of editor. Others will be called authors. Generally, authors will defer to editors when editors are speaking about their own areas of expertise. Otherwise, the editor will just be an author when he writes on about something that he doesn't know about. When authors get into a dispute, they may work out a compromise, or they may consult an editor. Editors' decisions will be logged in a new standard part of each article's discussion page. Now, for the most part, editors will work in the system just as everyone else does, shoulder to shoulder with ordinary authors. Editors will not be able to work in a top-down fashion or to squat on articles and prevent others from making any changes. Editors who are not comfortable with this arrangement should not participate. Those who attempt to make articles their own personal bailiwicks, shooing off everyone else, will be ejected from the project no matter what their qualifications. Editors will be self-selecting in a certain way. There will be no editorial selection process, at least this is my proposal. Rather, editors will be invited to come to the website and simply declare themselves to be editors if they meet certain benchmark requirements, the same straight-up credentials that the offline world relies on. Editors will be required to state their credentials on their user pages for everyone to examine. And if an editor claims to have editor-enabling credentials and is found not to, then this person will be demoted or ejected. Editors will have the right to place articles in an approved category. Other qualified editors may remove articles from the approved category. Disputes then will be settled by discipline-oriented editorial work groups. Second, let's look at some differences in the community. There will be no logged out editing and no anonymous editing. Anyone may participate, but all must be logged in under their own real names. We will use the honor principle to begin with, as befits a wiki project after all, and with a working email address. Where Wikipedia shares the culture of anonymity found in the broader internet, the Citizendium will have a culture of real-world personal responsibility. The community will launch with a charter that articulates the project's goals, fundamental policies, governance, and the rights of participants and of the public. As with most charters, the Citizendium community charter will be relatively brief and vague, difficult to change, and regarded as the binding law of the project. All contributors will, as a condition of their participation, be expected to support the community charter. If they cannot do this, they are not welcome to participate and may be ejected from the project. The charter and rules will be enforced by constables. That will be, at least I propose, that will be the local name for administrators. In time, an effective and fair legal system will be established that hopefully doesn't have the problems of Wikipedia's. Third, over the years, Wikipedia has suffered some feature creep. The citizendium will be deliberately simplified and kept simple. In addition, copyright and libel abuses will be handled quite differently. And finally, the citizendium won't officially even call itself an encyclopedia. We might call it an experimental workspace. So much for the differences, and as I hope you can see, they are significant. But it is important to note that the system will still work very much in the way that Wikipedia does in many respects. Areas of similarity include: it's more or less kind of like an encyclopedia. It's a wiki that aspires to be as good as a real encyclopedia. It's open to virtually everyone. Virtually anyone can come to the website and within a few minutes be working on an article. It is not Expertpedia. It is the citizendium. It will use the same license, the GNU FDL. There will be no advertisements. There may be unobtrusive nonprofit text sponsorship statements at the bottom of the page. That remains to be determined by the community. It will come under the control of a nonprofit foundation. At this time, the project is entirely independent of the Digital Universe Foundation. The neutrality policy will be virtually the same, and the rule against original research will be virtually the same. The MediaWiki software will be the same, although some settings will be different, of course, and there are no plans to fork the software. Finally, I want to discuss the way forward. In other words, how to get this project started. Whatever else we do, we should have the servers and the wiki software set up and available to some, at least some beta testers, by the end of this month, September 30th. So while waiting for the wiki to be set up, what can ordinary rank and file future authors and editors do? Three things. First, join a project mailing list. They're up and available for people to join right now. Second, contribute your thoughts to the discussion. And third, wait for the announcement that the wiki is ready to edit. I want to start the project with a bang. I would like to strain the limits of whatever server configuration we put in place. So much for the short run. As to the medium term, over the coming weeks, I hope the Citizendium project will be contacted by individuals as well as universities, foundations, and companies. My personal belief, which I do not hold very strongly, is that the latent interest in and support for this project will allow us to collect a truly stellar group of advisors and partner institutions. If so, this experiment might succeed brilliantly. As to what we need precisely, please see the project FAQ, which is now online. It's actually at citizendium.org for some ideas. Once the wiki has launched, we should begin to form some discipline-specific editorial work groups. Also, once the wiki has launched, I think we should immediately hold a series of monthly face-to-face meetings in about a half a dozen major cities. This will lead up to a big meeting about the project charter. I'm making this announcement in Germany, in part because my personal commitment to making this project fully international as quickly as is feasible and responsible to do. On the other hand, I do not want to presume to speak for the interested German-speaking community online, knowing, as you do now, that I personally intend to get behind a fork of the English language Wikipedia, I put the question to you. Should we make a similar fork of the German language Wikipedia? That's something to talk about in the beer-to-beer networking that will be taking place after, this evening. I love that phrase, beer-to-beer. Beer-to-beer networking. While this organization is going on, while this organizational work is going on, I wish to put together the finest possible set of advisors for this project. Their role as advisors will give them a special platform from which to advise the project and speak on its behalf. Moreover, it is this group of people who will meet at the Constitutional Convention to ratify the project's charter. So, let us create a vibrant yet responsible new community. Together, I think we will have an amazing journey. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry. As one of the organizers of the Wizards of Oz, of course, I feel thrilled that you chose the Wizards of Oz as the conference to make this announcement. We now have two models. Two kinds of critique, expertism and amateurism were the key words. I think there is, in fact, a lot in common, after all, by the both approaches, but there is also a clear difference. I would like to ask Ulrich first. You've probably looked at the atmospheric science-related articles in Wikipedia. Martin, you talked about the WikiPress publication on solar systems, and I assume there is a lot of input by scientists, by astronomers, in both the original articles that were collected in the book and also in the editing, or was the editing done by experts?
Yeah, the editor is a student of astrophysics from the University of Erlangen.
Okay. So my question to Ulrich, could you give us some feeling for the quality of knowledge presented by these articles in Wikipedia within these two poles of amateurism and expertism?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's really exactly like Martin described already before. If I look at the atmospheric chemistry page, for example, it gave a couple of references, essentially, which were good references, but only a couple out of 10 that would be appropriate for this. I think it was good information, but really limited in its way. And I guess that if you just redo it without editing it, it will always, to some extent, stay like that, because then somebody else comes and kicks out something or whatever, and you don't have this sort of concerted effort to bring it one level further. So this was the comment that I anyhow would have liked to make, is really what you described earlier on is just essentially the same thing that we have in scientific discussion also, that you have some sort of divergence occasionally with this problem, and then also who is the real expert. And this goes, so I think it's funny because we haven't met before, but it was really, it got together very nicely from my point of view, because I think that's what Larry brought up is really sort of the way that I also think is the only way to improve on it substantially, to try and implement additional new structures into it. So just as you said, the combination of such a free wiki, which is very vibrant, and then some sort of channeling of information in one way or the other. So, and essentially in our very small field, I mean, it's a much more complex thing that you are dealing with than I'm dealing with. This is what we tried to do, and also in a very compact way, but there it was very successful. So in some sense, you know, the Wikipedia would be sort of what we have as a discussion forum, but it's much more open than ours, of course. And the Nupedia would be something, or not the Nupedia, the Citizendium, sorry, the Citizendium would be essentially also what we have as final revised papers there. But again, we have it in a very narrow thing, and it's just an analogy. It's not the same thing, but I found it very interesting.
Well, just one little quote or clarification. Mm-hmm. The Citizendium, the role of editors in the Citizendium is not going to be to cherry pick the best articles and then freeze them at all. I don't propose to have any stable versions at all, in fact. What I propose is simply to add a tag, right? That, and I also propose that editors actually work shoulder to shoulder right alongside ordinary contributors.
Right. But this is just to follow up on this. This is, I also saw it like that, actually. This was what I had on the Outlook, you know, to have multi-stage even in science, but in science it's a little bit different than in a general encyclopedia or compendium, but this would then be this multi-level approach that you then put a tag on it again and move it. And I think it's very important to really always keep all the original versions precisely to freeze things just as you addressed it. I think that's a very important aspect for any kind of such venture, to have very clear traceability back in time.
Well, we have quite a bit of time for discussion, and I'm absolutely sure that many of you are eager to ask questions. But before we open it up for the hall, I would like to give both Martin and Larry a chance to sort of take this expertism and amateurism critique and comment on each other's position in what you have now heard about the different approaches. Maybe Martin first?
Well, there are still very many open questions with your project. For example, you said that you will deal with copyright in a different way, and that would be interesting to hear what this way is. And then you spoke about discipline-oriented things. I'm a bit, I feel a bit uneasy, as a German, when you speak about discipline and constables. That sounds very, very German-like from another time, at least. The first thing, you mentioned that again, you want to add tags to articles coming from experts, but isn't that what Wikipedia does with featured articles? I mean, that was the intention of featured articles, and you now want to do the same thing within another project. That is how it seems. Well, you say that Wikipedia has difficulties in enforcing their rules. There have been measures undertaken and introduced, and that went without problems. We have featured articles, we have good articles, we have these categories, we have validation procedures which will come up, and I don't see that problem that much, that Wikipedia has problems there. Perhaps there are difficulties with there are differences between the German Wikipedia, which I know better than the English Wikipedia, but on the whole run, well, things develop more or less in the same way, as far as I see it. And then again, that what you mentioned with amateurism and expertism, then again, that is perhaps addressed to your comment. When you see these articles, you always have to keep in mind that they are not meant for scientists, but are meant for the general public. And that means that it isn't intended to have the highest and most advanced scientific level within an encyclopedia for everybody?
Well, I'm not really quite sure what your point was about featured articles, because it isn't my understanding, perhaps things have changed, but it isn't my understanding that experts actually choose the featured articles. That would be the difference. So the idea is that in a new system which has experts specifically named editors, the editors would be able to select articles that meet criteria that the editors have themselves established. Establishing these criteria won't necessarily anyway constrain the overall work that's being done on the wiki, but I think it'll help achieve a level of discipline and ordnung. No, I'm just kidding. But no, the idea is that the featured articles, I know. I'm actually the guy who started the Brilliant Prose page that morphed into the featured articles thing. I know there's all kinds of great articles on Wikipedia. I know that there are processes already and have been in place for years now, actually, for choosing the better articles. But sometimes I look at the articles that are featured articles and I have to ask myself, would an expert looking at this article have anything to say that I would want to hear about? Well, the way to find out is to get them more engaged in the process. Unfortunately, because Wikipedia is, as it seems to me, pretty committed to its amateurism, as I didn't use that word, but if you're going to use expertism, I'm going to use the word amateurism. If you're that committed, if Wikipedia community is that committed to amateurism, it seems to me that a fork is probably necessary. That's part of my argument. Now, you were nervous a little bit about the idea of editorial work groups oriented around subject or areas or disciplines. Well, I'll just tell you that at this point, I have made a proposal, and I'm very much open to discussion of the widest range. We've set up mailing lists, a half a dozen mailing lists, actually, in which the discussion can take place. Obviously, we won't be able to restrain, not that we would want to, I certainly don't want to restrain discussion going on in other places like blogs and or Wikipedia lists or wherever. And I'll try to follow the discussion where it goes. But the point is, because that discussion is going on, what I want to do is essentially attract a lot of people, because I know there are a lot of people out there like this who love the idea of Wikipedia on the one hand, but on the other hand, they want to see a more responsible scheme of community governance and a more prominent and responsible place for experts in the community. If we agree on a certain fundamental principles like that, I think we'll be able to get enough people together to create a system that is very different from Wikipedia, but still retains the Wikipedia magic. So that's...
So, now it is your turn. Please come up to the microphone.
Hello, I'm Matthias Schindler. I have a question for Larry. I listened carefully to what you proposed and what the differences are and similarities to Wikipedia. And one difference I could find was that your proposal has no materialized, has not materialized yet, of course, as it's proposed, yes. So it's very hard for me to compare something that does exist to something that may exist in the future. Which brings me to two other encyclopedias you are working with, called the Encyclopedia of Earth and the Digital Universe Encyclopedia, or the second one I've have not found a consistent name for the second one. So what happened to this? I saw an announcement for this to be released in spring, and then I saw an announcement to be released in summer. Then I saw an announcement to be released in fall. I ask you, what is the delay? You asked me what delay, and I pointed you to the page, and the next time I clicked on it, the announcement was gone, essentially. So what is the purpose of having a short proposal despite fixing the one that do exist more or less?
And I'm glad you asked. That was a good question. Basically, the Encyclopedia of Earth is under development. They have over 1,000 articles in the wiki, but at present it is a semi-closed wiki. It has well over 200, several hundred participants, but they are environmental scientists and other people using an editorial process which is slightly different from Wikipedia's and also from the proposed process for Thucydides Endymion. I think Cutler Cleveland, who is the editor-in-chief of the Encyclopedia of Earth, has made excellent progress, actually. And I suppose you could say the reason for the delays has been a slow development of the tools. That's the reason that I've heard given internally. I personally am not working as part of the core group actually developing the Encyclopedia of Earth. The Digital Universe Encyclopedia is essentially, that's the usual name that we give it, is going to be a part of the overall digital universe. The Encyclopedia of Earth is going to be the first component, basically, of the Digital Universe Encyclopedia. So the idea is the Encyclopedia of Earth is an environmental science and related issues encyclopedia. And then as time goes on, we're going to be launching similar projects that will develop other subject-specific encyclopedias. Let me think here. Does that answer the question? Okay, what question didn't I answer? I want to answer. Oh, right. In other words, why a new project at all? Yes.
Yes, okay. But why not fixing the existing ones?
It isn't a matter of fixing the existing ones. We have always, in fact, if you look back at an interview I gave last December, the Digital Universe Foundation has always been planning, well, since last year, on a public contribution encyclopedia, and the Encyclopedia of Earth is not that, essentially. And without getting into too many details, which I just must not do on this because it's a bit of a sensitive issue internally, essentially, how should I put it? The impetus for public participation in the Digital Universe Encyclopedia effort was not as strong as I wanted it to be. And I also saw 4 or 6 weeks ago that there is an opportunity which is, I think, it could prove to be absolutely amazing for a fork of Wikipedia. We were considering it last year, and the The reason that we didn't fork Wikipedia, and in fact, this is what we told Jimmy Wales when he visited us last fall. I believe we told him at the time that we were planning on forking it, but then we proceeded not to, and that's because the people behind the Encyclopedia of Earth didn't want to. I really shouldn't say anything else other than that. I let me also add that I have enormous respect for Cutler Cleveland and Peter Sondry and the people behind the Environmental Information Coalition and the Encyclopedia of Earth. They're extremely smart, and Cutler in particular is a perfect example of an academic who went from a place where he had almost no respect for wikis to someone who's gotten on board the idea. And really, I mean, if there were more professors who were like that, it would be great. So.
Polarization between expertism and amateurism, and I just wonder if we see a spectrum of metaphors, I mean something between the bazaar and the cathedral, if you heard about this new Agora and Senate living library concept, something like an open ontology we put under this dropping knowledge project to really make it accessible based on the works on Paul Odlet since 100 years on classification and used for 30 years with the Encyclopedia of World Problems and Human Potentials and the Encyclopedia of Systems and Cybernetics. I just want you to open a little bit that there are more thinking about shared ontologies and not just the magic.
First of all, I'd like to respond to something that you said about there being a spectrum of positions between amateurism and expertism, whatever those really mean. Personally, I would not describe myself as an expertist. the world, in my opinion, needs a place, a more sort of fun, responsible place for ordinary people to work. That's my view, and I think that expert involvement will actually help make it more fun for ordinary people. So I think I take the middle position, actually. I mean, this isn't Expertpedia, it's Citizendium. It's named that for a reason. The proposal is named that for a reason. It doesn't exist yet, nope, but hopefully it will pretty soon. Second, you were talking about the bazaar versus the cathedral and how, I suppose, amateurism is associated with the bazaar model and expertism is associated with the cathedral model. One of the themes of my thinking in the last year or two has been that alignment of experts with the cathedral model of development is completely wrong, and people need to realize that it's wrong. Experts can work collaboratively in what I've called radical collaboration just as well as amateurs. And when they do, the world is going to change hugely, in my opinion. The whole world of publishing is going to change amazingly when experts and professionals finally wake up to the virtues of the bazaar model that was pioneered by the open source projects. I think it's actually time for people to look again, and that we recommend to academics and research scientists and so forth to look again at Eric Raymond's essays, to look again at the cathedral and the bazaar and homesteading the noosphere, because I think that we might be able to get more of the intellectual leaders of society on board with those concepts. And you, there was something else there, but not, open. I guess I'm not really familiar with the internet library, so living library. Is the living library a wiki?
No.
Well, this is going to be a wiki. There's all kinds of differences, I'm sure. I'd be amazed if I just happened to reinvent what someone else had done. Did they fork Wikipedia? No. Also, you asked about the prospects of ontologies developed collaboratively. Personally, I'm very skeptical of that. An ontology is like a book. They tend to be best written by single people, and no one, as far as I know, has really discovered a magic way to get many, many people together to build those things. The reason that I say that is that ontologies and books are intensely personal things. To really make sense of, let me back up a little bit. I started a related project last spring called the Text Outline Project. It's at textop.org. TextOP.org. I'm going to be backburnering that project while I get Citizendium started. And there I actually do propose, and we actually started doing this to a small extent, working on an outline of knowledge. You know, so to a certain extent, I do want to say that it's possible, but it's going to take a lot of trial and error before we hit on the right way to do it. The biggest problem is it's just really, really hard to get everyone on the same page as to what the principles of the ontology or the outline or whatever are. I mean, that's the biggest problem. If you want to do it collaboratively, people have to have a shared understanding of what the project is. An encyclopedia is totally different. An encyclopedia article, everyone knows what that is. Everyone has a concept of what an encyclopedia article is and has a more or less shared understanding of what a good encyclopedia article is. There's not a very good shared understanding of what a good ontology is or what a good taxonomy is, or for that matter, what a good book is. So,
we do have a couple of minutes left, but I would like to ask you to be brief. Also, we have one more question. So, Martin, you're next.
Yeah. Well, about this problem of expertism and amateurism, I think all of us on stage here are somewhere between. Want to have more experts with amateurism or more amateurs with expertism, or so. Ulrich Böschel has shown very well what happens when experts discover the bizarre, because that is what you did. You went to, edit a bizarre model to a scientific publication, and that proved to be the right way. And well, keeping that in mind, I think, even if I understand Larry Wright, who always says that, it is not necessary that experts keep to the cathedral and so on. I think the best way would be to keep on working with what exists, so with Wikipedia, and try to introduce things as we as we have done. So the only reason why you want to fork is that, from your point of view, Larry, there is a dysfunctional community behind Wikipedia. And at the same time, you say tenths of millions of intellectuals are around the world, but these people are with Wikipedia. So that is what, at least for the German Wikipedia, the Würzburg study has found out. The level of education is very high. One has to call almost all Wikipedians there intellectuals. So that I think that is a good basis. So still the question remains, well, you say there's a dysfunctional community and you base this on impressions and not on, at least not on research.
I left the community because it was dysfunctional, and I don't think that it has changed. It's not based on impressions. I helped get Wikipedia started. So it's based on intense personal experience. I think that what you're saying is essentially that Wikipedia can solve. Here, let me go back to the list. It can solve the problem that essentially it is off-putting to academics. Now, I'm very interested in that. And if I believed you were right, then I would be much less motivated to do this fork. Then it would have much less justification. Therefore, I invite you or anyone to actually argue. I didn't hear an argument. I'd like to see an extended, persuasive argument that experts can be brought on board Wikipedia in a way that they are not now. Because clearly, I mean, I agree. I share your assessment of the quality of the average Wikipedian. They're great. They're extremely smart, no matter whether they have credentials or not. So we don't disagree about that. What we disagree about, apparently, is whether there are enough of the knowledge leaders of society participating. And I don't think that there are enough of them. And why not? Well, then we get back to the dysfunctional community thing. So I disagree that I have only one problem that I'm trying to solve. You could say I have a cluster of related problems, and indeed perhaps something about the community and its dysfunction is maybe the root problem. I don't know.
So. Well, maybe just one quick comment on it, because I don't really know all the history behind it or anything like that, but I would support Larry's point of view in the sense that from experience it's just fairly difficult to reform efficiently existing structures, and sometimes more efficient to create a new structure, and that little details in a structure are very important on how things run. So it might be, I think it I don't know again how one could implement all this into Wikipedia as it is now, but I just would like to say that from my point of view as a scientist, it might very well be worthwhile to try it with a new structure that gives you an alternative, and then see what comes out first. If then Wikipedia still stays on top because it reforms accordingly, or if this other one evolves in the same way, if they collaborate, or how it goes.
I think eventually the projects are going to be complementary. They will be able to sort of work together in socially complementary niches of society.
So this is, of course, an exciting debate. We're running over time. Last question, please.
Another question for Larry Sanger. If I understood you correctly, you said that one of the similarities with Wikipedia shall be that you also want to use GNU-FDL. If that is so, and as we all know that there are some problems with the free documentation license because it's particularly made for manuals, I can only see a reason to use the FDL nowadays, that there are Creative Commons licenses and other licenses outside, that you want to develop Wikipedia articles, which are already there, for example, or that you want to use other stuff to put into your new project and then develop it. Is that so, or is there another particular reason to use the FDL?
Well, the only reason that I propose to use the FDL is that it's based on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia uses the FDL, and the FDL requires that we use the FDL if we're going to be forking it. It's a viral license in that sense.
if we were to try to use the corresponding Creative Commons license, which explicitly or semi-explicitly permits interoperability, then we'd have even more of a controversy on our hands, which I think I want to avoid. Essentially, to be quite frank, I think, and I know this must be like heresy in this room to say this, but I don't really think the license matters that much. Basically, the license is just a placeholder for a concept. We all understand what open source or open content is, we know that there are certain things that are permitted with the FDL or with the corresponding Creative Commons license, and there's other things that are not permitted. Everyone shares this general understanding, but it's only the people who just really care about this stuff that go into the licenses and carefully examine. I mean, I should just leave it at that because I think I'm probably not convincing anyone. So.
Thank you very much. So if you are one of the people who care about licensees, this is the perfect opportunity to point out that in the workshop room over in the big hall, there will be a workshop on free content licensing issues starting right now. And here in this hall, the Open Spectrum panel is about to come on stage. Yes, I'm seeing the panelists already after 5 minutes. Please give a hand to this panelist. Thank you.